Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Finish school and not sure what's next? Explore further education and training options at thisisfet.ie.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1.
The son of a GP and pharmacist who delivered medicines around Southampton on his bicycle. The hedge fund manager who, with his wife, is worth £730 million sterling. The first British Prime Minister of Indian descent and, as a Hindu, the first non-Christian, but as establishment as ever. Boarding school, Oxford, Goldman Sachs, Stanford, hedge funds, think tanks, and then the Conservative Party. Who is Rishi Sunak, the man who becomes the UK's third Prime Minister in 7 weeks this morning? And what kind of PM will he be? Well, in a moment, I'll speak to Cindy Yu, broadcast editor with The Spectator, and RTÉ's Barry Lenehan is outside Downing Street now. First, though, outgoing Prime Minister Liz Truss has been speaking in the past few minutes in her farewell to office. Here's some of what she had to say.
From my time as Prime Minister, I am more convinced than ever that we need to be bold and confront the challenges that we face. As the Roman philosopher Seneca wrote, it's not because things are difficult that we do not dare. It's because we do not dare that they are difficult. We simply cannot afford to be a low-growth country where the government takes up an increasing share of our national wealth and where there are huge divides between different parts of our country. We need to take advantage of our Brexit freedoms to do things differently.
Interesting. Barry Lenehan joins us live now from Downing Street. Barry, I know you were watching Liz Truss as she delivered that statement in the last few minutes. Is she saying I was right?
Yeah, it seems so, Claire. Not much contrition for the political chaos and indeed the economic turmoil of the last 7 weeks of the shortest prime ministerial reign in British history. But yeah, you have it there. Liz Truss pretty much doubling down on her time in office as she departs. The gates just swinging open here at Whitehall in the past few minutes, and Ms Truss making the short car drive across to Buckingham Palace to officially tender her resignation to the King of England, King Charles. Ms Truss also confirming in that speech that she'll be returning to the Tory backbenches, but regrets I have but none, it seems, from Ms Truss, speaking perhaps of a time unfulfilled here at number 10 Downing Street in front of me. But really, Ms Truss departing the stage, the focus now on Rishi Sunak, as you say, and really the chatter this morning and all last night about what cabinet appointments he might now make in the next few hours. Of course, his first statement to the Tory party yesterday, calling on them to unite or die. And the MPs I've been speaking to over the last 24 hours, such as the former Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, Teresa Villiers, telling me how essentially they expect Mr Sunak to have a broad church from the Tory party at the cabinet table, appointments from the different factions, such as the centrist One Nation group, but also the European Research Group as well, and who might be appointed from that. That will be keenly watched indeed by those on Merrion Street and Kildare Street in Dublin and also in Brussels in terms of the future Brexit negotiations and the future of the Northern Ireland Protocol as well. But it's not expected Mr Sunak will appoint a cabinet laden with loyalists such as his predecessors Liz Truss and Boris Johnson did. But there are big decisions to make, such as the future of the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt. He has a big economic statement due next Monday. We are expecting an appointment for allies such as Dominic Raab, and what of Suella Braverman, 6 days ago sacked as Home Secretary. It feels like a lifetime ago in British politics, but she might also be expecting a call up after a gushing article for Mr Sunak in the Telegraph there yesterday. But really, as you alluded to in the intro as well, Claire, the spotlight on Mr Sunak himself, only elected as an MP for Richmond and Yorkshire in 2015, only 2 years experience as a minister as well. So questions around his breadth of experience for this big job. Questions as well around his wealth, his love of luxury goods as well documented, his memorable failure to use a contactless card in a petrol station. And really, can he speak to a British population struggling with the cost of living crisis? But his supporters say he's sober, he's sensible. They point to his economic clairvoyancy in predicting Liz Truss's downfall. And really that's what they are hoping, that he will bring stability to Britain. But I've been out and about on the streets of London this morning asking commuters what they know and what they expect of Rishi Sunak.
I'm hoping he can bring the party together because I've got no confidence in a Labour government. And I think they're all as bad as each other, really. And I just wish and I hope that Rishi can look to his where he is now with his wealth and in his status and just have a bit more compassion with the people who haven't got very much now in the cost of living crisis.
Do you think that is an issue because he is the richest MP in the building over there?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's got to be an issue and there's no getting away from it. I'm from a working class background and a miner's daughter, you know, and I've worked my way up and I've worked really hard. And so I can appreciate how he's worked really hard. But at the same time, I'm absolutely mindful of where I've come from and I'm not quite sure Rishi's there yet.
What does he need to do a good job?
Get the cost of living down, help the people with the bills and support working people. I think working people are just struggling.
What Liz did with regards to, you know, the economy and bond prices was a joke. So it remains to be seen. Until we see his policies, I can't really judge him.
What's the main thing he has to do when he gets behind that black door later?
Well, ultimately, stabilise the ship, because that's the, honestly, the main issue right now. Until that can be sorted, we can't really progress, and they can't really be looking at their 2019 manifesto.
I don't think it makes any difference. They were going to do what they wanted to do, weren't they? So another unelected prime minister, so no, general election definitely.
I think we've got somebody who actually understands and can actually deal with the problems that we face. I guess that as long as he's able to repair the economy, then people will begin to perhaps forgive some of the mayhem that they've seen over the past few weeks. If he doesn't manage to do that in short order, then I think that he becomes maybe as much of a victim of the situation as his predecessors.
He's the first British Asian Prime Minister, the youngest Prime Minister in 300 years.
I think it's going to be easier for people to kind of recognise that a person's race doesn't stop them from doing a good job. The jury's out right now, the challenge is there, but I hope for the sake of the British people that he can actually deliver.
All right, well, I'm joined by Cindy Yu there, broadcast editor with The Spectator. And Cindy, we were hearing those views from people our reporter Barry Lenehan was talking to on the streets of London. Mixed, you know, there are high hopes, but people are still suspicious of Rishi Sunak because he's an unknown quantity. And I think that suspicion is increased because of his vast wealth, would you say?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think most people in this country know him through the coronavirus pandemic, where he was the chancellor who, you know, made furlough happen, Eat Out to Help Out, all of these giveaways, which were, you know, obviously increasing very, very welcome and very popular at the time. But you can see closer to the end of the pandemic that he was already starting to return to his fiscal conservative instincts. And that was also when these kind of stories about his own wealth starts to come up. So it's never a good look when you're incredibly wealthy and you're telling voters, oh, you're just going to have to buckle up a little bit. At the same time, I do think that Rishi Sunak has demonstrated that he's able to be empathetic in his message giving. Often during the pandemic, it seemed like Boris Johnson wasn't able to give a bad message, wasn't be able to reassure people because all he could ever be was positive, positive. But Rishi Sunak was actually able to be serious, get you know, face-to-face to people, and in those press conferences demonstrated a good level of empathy. If he can keep that up, then I think that will be a very important first step to kind of win the trust of the British voters.
I just want to find out a little bit more about Rishi Sunak, because we know that he was formerly an investment banker and he was doing very well in that career. So what propelled him towards politics?
I thought your introduction was great about all of the contradictions of his life, the fact that he's from a relatively middle class background, that his family are immigrants, but then that he went to one of the most prestigious boarding schools in the UK, then made loads of money and then married the daughter of one of the richest men in India, and now is prime minister. So, you know, those are the contradictions in his life. He clearly had an early interest in politics, having done politics, philosophy and economics at Oxford, PPE, which is the degree that many prime ministers go down. And so, you know, given his time in finance afterwards, I guess he just got back into it. He's very good friends with our political editor at The Spectator, James Forsyth, and The Telegraph has a very interesting write-up today saying that it was James Forsyth who brought Rishi Sunak into politics. I'm not sure that's quite true, just because clearly this is a man who was already very, very interested in public service, in politics as well. But yes, now he's here.
Now, there was one of Barry's interviewees who said something that's still in my mind. Is Rishi mindful, she asked, of where he came from? And we know he has vowed to tighten the definition of who qualifies for asylum. He also wants to introduce, we understand, a cap on refugee numbers, broker more deals like the controversial Rwanda policy. How does that chime, Cindy, with his own background?
So his parents didn't, grandparents didn't come as refugees, as far as I understand. They came as immigrants, and they certainly didn't come illegally. So I guess you might say, I mean, I haven't spoken to people close to him, but you might say that, you know, this is not an anti-immigration view. This is an anti-illegal immigration view. On the Rwanda policy, obviously, it's an incredibly harsh way to deal with illegal immigration. But actually, this country hasn't managed to send anyone to Rwanda yet. We've actually just spent a lot of money paying Rwanda to set up the infrastructure. But because of various legal challenges, I don't think that anyone has actually been sent there yet. What is interesting will be to see how Rishi Sunak deals. I don't personally think this is one of his hobby horses. This is not a passion of his, in the same way that Suella Braverman has said it's a dream of hers to send illegal migrants to Rwanda. But given the fact that he will have to make deals with the right of the party, and specifically probably get Suella Braverman back into cabinet, what are the compromises that he's going to have to make on these issues? I think his primary focus is going to be on the cost of living for this country in the short term. But I think these are the flashpoints that he's going to have to deal with, because he wants to build a government of unity.
Cindy, this is going to be the fascinating part of this, because we don't know yet just how hard line he's going to be on immigration, on illegal immigration. We don't know how hard line he's going to be on Brexit either, do we?
No, he was always a Brexiteer. He was one of the early, being a 2015 MP, he was one of the few 2015 MPs who went against David Cameron and actually was a Brexiteer instead of campaigning for Remain. So he clearly believes in the principles of Brexit. But actually, he hasn't said much about what he believes the society of this country should look like. You don't associate him with that kind of almost culture wars, racial discussions going on there. So it's a big question mark at the moment. But I get the feeling that his support for Brexit comes more from a sovereignty perspective rather than a control on immigration perspective. But of course, he hasn't said much on it, so I may be wrong about that.
Yes, some sources in the Irish government speaking anonymously to the Irish Times this morning talk about their hopes that he will be a pragmatic Brexiteer. Do you think that characterisation is on the money?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, bear in mind that he was Chancellor for a long time at the same time that Liz Truss was in charge of the Northern Ireland Protocol. I understand that the Treasury and Liz Truss had a lot of conversations about that, and it often fell to the Chancellor to water down her most belligerent proposals. And so I think he can be expected to be a bit more pragmatic on that, at least not just being overly aggressive for no reason.
You touched on the differences between Rishi Sunak and Boris Johnson earlier, and you think that he is more empathetic. Now, I read in the Telegraph this morning that he had an addiction to Coca-Cola, which he says that he has managed to conquer in that he has one can of Coke a week. But his aide, according to the Telegraph, carries this emergency can of Coca-Cola and a Twix so that he has it on hand for difficult situations. Does Rishi Sunak have to try very hard to appear like a normal guy?
I think it's very difficult for politicians to appear normal or not normal. I think, you know, when you're constantly under the public eye, when you've got people like us, you know, literally discussing your family history, you know, it's very hard to come across, to know what the best way of coming across is. And you see politicians struggling with this all of the time. Ed Balls, for example, the former Labour frontbencher, Ed Miliband, the former Labour leader, both of them were immensely teased for being boring or for doing something cringeworthy. After leaving frontline politics, they would then allow their personalities to come out and were much more personable. So I think part of the problem is the game that they're playing, that politics doesn't allow them to have certain types of personalities or whatever it is. On the sugar addiction, that's something I've heard as well. I think bearing in mind that Rishi Sunak is teetotal, so he doesn't have alcohol to as an ameliorator, he can only get turned to sugar. So I think that's quite understandable.
Yeah, I think it caused quite a lot of dental damage because he's got 7 fillings, and he admitted that himself, that he spent a lot of his childhood in the dentist's office, dental surgery. The Labour Party, what will their line of attack be now, do you expect?
So there are two really effective lines of attack, I think. One is that Rishi Sunak has no mandate to to govern. You can arguably say that Liz Truss did, because it was through the Conservative Party's own leadership processes that once Boris Johnson resigned, Liz Truss was then elected by the members. Given this latest coronation, the members were not even consulted. So, you know, just even leaving aside that how peeved Tory members currently feel, Labour has a very effective argument to say, we voted for the 2019 Conservative government, the country did, but not this kind of weird coronation of MPs chosen prime minister. And I think that is a very fair point. The other thing that they can very effectively say, which they have been, is that he's just too rich to be in touch with your ordinary voters. You look at his £400 Prada shoes, you look at his £200 thermos flask, you look at all of these different things that he clearly has a very different standard of living to a lot of people struggling in this country. And I think ultimately it comes down to whether or not voters care about that kind of thing, because It's not as if Boris Johnson was necessarily reflective of the experiences and lives of ordinary people in this country either, but voters clearly didn't care. So will they care now for Rishi Sunak? They may do. We don't know yet. Okay. So we will have to see.
Well, Cindy, a listener called Ed has been in touch to say it's not a crime to be rich. If anything, Sunak's wealth makes him incorruptible. And I know that is a point of discussion where you are. Does wealth make you incorruptible? But we may have to speak to you again at length on another day about that one. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. That's Cindy Yu, broadcast editor with The Spectator. We'll take a break.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.